Hello, everyone out there in Tampa Bay and beyond. This is James Knowles coming at you for the RVLR Sports Podcast. I am here tonight to cover the Rowdies with our returning shadowboxing champion, Carlos. He is always here, always shadowboxing, always talking about the Rowdies. Carlos, how are you doing tonight on this Tuesday?
James, I'm always fighting. The Rowdies didn't give up this week. I feel a little bit better than I did after a couple of these past losses. I'll save it for just a minute. I'm a little fired up. I got to be down there in Louisville. I'll tell you what, I was fired up for the wrong reasons in those first 20 minutes of the game. Good Lord. The Louisville, if you're watching the broadcast on that first level, I was furthest to the left on your screen. So it was fun because looking back at the highlights, you just see my green jacket and my green sweater or my green scarf very much popping out in the stands. And I think you could see me getting quite into it, maybe yelling a little bit, my frustrations, very much to the comedic relief of the Louisville fans around me, who were all great people. Shout out to all of them. I was telling Eureka this, and I told James as we started to go live. Louisville fans really piss me off because they're really nice, and I just can't like smack talk them. They're ridiculous. Like I walked in and I accidentally like walked by their march into the stadium with my girlfriend, and we're decked out in green and yellow. And I'm like, you know, giving them flack, and I'm giving them a counter Rowdies chant as they walk by me. And like three of them walk up, hey man, like good to meet you. Like, thanks for coming out. Like, it's really great to see you. Like, thanks for making the trek and joining us. I couldn't say anything back to that, James. It was nice people. Plus $2 beers before the game. So they got me settled in nice. I enjoyed my time over there. If you're ever over there, make sure to do the fun little bourbon tastings, the Muhammad Ali museums, the all of it. It's great. Good food, good barbecue, good people. Really great city. So would definitely recommend going back next year. Always a good place to be. James, the result wasn't what we wanted. I'll save my comments for it in just a little bit, but overall, a great weekend, great time in Louisville. Spent some time in Cincinnati as well and tried the infamous Skyline Chili. Not bad.
Okay.
Not bad. I know, and I was telling my girlfriend that I was excited either way to try it so that I know how to properly smack talk Cincinnati whenever we play them in any sport in Tampa.
Fair.
But now I know it's actually not that bad, so it's not going to be authentic. Eureka said it's overrated spaghetti sauce, and it's sauce. It's not chili. I didn't really understand that until I actually ate it, but not bad. All that being said, James, we can talk about the Rowdies in a minute. I think there's a lot to talk about. I'm fired up, good and bad, but mostly bad or mostly good. I'm back and forth, but I feel rather positive. But James,
depends on the moment.
Yeah. Oh, and I got this fun like vintage like golf sweater at some little market close to the stadium, or sorry, in Cincinnati, close to FCC stadium, and like a retro Buck shirt for not that much. So, James, it was a good weekend. I got some good gear going. How are you doing? Tell me, how hyped are you? The Sun are in the final. The Rowdies, maybe you're getting better. But how are you doing before we talk about any of the fun stuff going on in Tampa sports?
Yeah, I'm doing well. Obviously, like you said, the Sun are in the final. My wife and I were at the semifinal, and that was a very exciting game, very good game. Yeah. I believe that we'll be recording for the Sun show later. So if you have any interest in sticking around for both of them, or at least listening to both of them when they're both out, I would suggest doing that because there's so much news going on and there's so much hype going on with the Sun. I think hype is a big word on this show. Maybe it's toned down a little bit, but there's still hype to be talked about with the Sun at the very least. As you said, though, Carlos, there are good updates with the Rowdies, and we're going to talk about how the Rowdies might be turning things around a little bit, we hope, at least doing better, I think, week per week. They did just play, according to the standings, tied for the best team in the overall league. So even if you lose, it's not the worst. But
Yeah.
Let's get into that now. In fact, we can talk about the loss because, as you said, it's more nuanced than that. There's a little bit more to it than just saying the Rowdies went out and lost another game. Last week, we were in Kentucky away, and we lost 2-1 to Louisville City. So we're going to discuss all of that. Of course, we're going to go into the goals and the players and why things might be a little bit better than they seem. And then we will preview the game this weekend against the Miami in the league. So stay tuned for that, obviously, as well. Don't forget our ticket competition to bring a new person to the Rowdies home games. The Rowdies are hosting, obviously, many games over the course of the season, but in particular, there are cool games coming up that celebrate the 50-year anniversary of the original founding of the Rowdies. So we have a ticket competition. All you have to do for that is bring somebody who's never been to a game, snap a selfie with them, post it on social media, and tag us, whichever social media you use, because, good segue, like and subscribe to us on YouTube and subscribe on any major podcast platform. But please, of course, follow us as well on all your social medias. Wherever you are, we are there at RBLR Sports as well. So join us, if you will. Carlos, let's get into the quick recap before we actually move into probably a longer recap. Let's do the lineup.
Absolutely. In goal, you had Bondre again getting another star after seeming to come into the preferred eyes of Steve Coleman. I'm not sure why I said it like that. You get what I'm saying. Bondre has been starting a goal recently. White was in front of him in what looked like a back line of three, kind of maybe four. James, I'm curious to hear your thoughts. I based on the notes we have here, you broke it in. You saw it as a back line of three with White, Castellanos, Guillen. In front of them, you had Moon, Benkaziel, Chrysostomo, Abbasse, and Bodley playing in that left wing back spot. In front of them, Leo Fernandez and Manu Arteaga. Leo Fernandez, was it Wubs that started over Manu? Yeah, sorry. Wubs and Pasillas started over Manu Arteaga. Manu comes on later in the game in this one. That was my other highlight. Manu coming off the bench, rather interesting. He has not gotten the starting 11 nod in this one. James, this was a really interesting lineup. In my opinion, with the exception of Luis Alvarez, obviously being the new signing this past week, it was one of our stronger 11s on paper. I really liked what we were doing here. It just a good looking 11. I'm not sold on Bondre over Kempisi yet, but we can save that for in a little bit. But goalie, question mark excluded. I really liked what we're doing here. Even with Arteaga coming off the bench, I still think that's a really, really great situation for us. Okay. All that being said, Rowdies go down 2-0 early. It was an unfortunate question of maybe defensive structure on that first goal. I can't really figure out who to blame. It was a looping ball on the back post where Bodley had to mark two guys. Again, not sure who to blame that goal on. Bodley runs over to, gets a good run, who's by himself, and knocks in a really impressive, complicated header to the far post. One, we later learned he was offsides, by the way. This is like looking back at the video and talking to the Rowdy staff after the game. They have like the extra camera angles that the ref doesn't have access to. Obviously, when he's on the field, you can see that he's a leg offsides on that pass. But those are things that, you know, out of your control. Still have to play better defensively. Again, maybe being a little harsh on Bondre, but the ball skips just kind of slowly by him. Maybe there's a little bit more he could do there. Unfortunate, but Rowdies go down 1-0 on a goal that I think very easily could have, maybe should have been called off. James, Louisville goes up 2-0 off of an incredibly unfortunate turnover. Chrysostomo loses sight of the Louisville press,
yeah.
Turns it over, turns into a very, very easy goal for Louisville. Louisville is up 2-0 just 20 minutes into the game. 15 minutes into the game. Not great. Not really where you want to be. I think this was especially painful because the Rowdies came back into this one rather strongly, James. Woobs got a lovely, lovely finish off of a great little run from Ollie. Woobs takes on three defenders by himself. Got me hyped up, got me back into the game, got me singing the the Rowdies Are Kicking the Grass song by myself in that stadium. It was pretty quiet. It was really great to hear echo a little bit. I was proud of myself, James. I got a good voice. I should join a choir or something. You could hear it reverberate in there in like the 25th minute or whatever we scored, 26th minute. Great goal from Woobs. Great run from Ollie. Rowdies take control possession wise with this one, create some good chances, get a lot of possession in that second half. Unfortunately, a couple unlucky bounces away from an equalizer. Rowdies lose this one 2-1, despite, I think, growing into the game very, 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 very well later on in this one. Unfortunately, playing against one of the best teams, if not the best team in the East right now. Away, very difficult. It's going to be hard to come back against a team like that. But, James, analysis time. Rowdies lose 2-1 in Louisville in a rather well-contested matchup. Speaking of best teams in the East, Louisville's one of them. Louisville has 25 points, tied with Charleston. Loudoun is in third place now, slowing down their role just a little bit, dropping to third after being in first place for what felt like a majority of this season so far. North Carolina FC have 20 points, another team that I think is surpassing expectations, to say
definitely mine.
Yeah, good for them. If you'll remember, they're still kind of in the recent era of jumping back up to the championship after being in USL League One. I miss the Railhawks. We should still bring back that name, but I'll save that for another day. Detroit City is in fifth place and with 17 points. And Pittsburgh, another team who is kind of slowly trying to make their way back, 14 points in 11 games. Miami FC is not the Miami FC of antes, James. This is a Miami FC that is back to being competitive. Mm-hmm. I want to note that in there because I think those games against us have been a little challenging. But this is not the Miami FC team we beat up on last year. They are in seventh place with 13 points. They have 4 wins. They compete in games. They're a legit team. Really, really interesting stuff. Out west, I don't really know what's going on. New Mexico United has 22 points. Tulsa, San Antonio, El Paso all have 20. Really, really competitive in that top four. Top five, top six. I mean, it's really fascinating out there, James. There's some really interesting teams playing decent soccer. I'd like to watch more, but they're all past my bedtime. I fall asleep rather early when there's, when the Rowdies aren't playing. Interesting stuff out there. Monterrey with 19, Phoenix with 19. So your top six teams are all separated by 3 points. Fascinating stuff. A lot of movement to be had up there. A bit more separation between 6 and 7. Orange County was 13. Neil Collins still struggling to find his rhythm with Sacramento, 13 points. And so on and so forth. Our peer last place team, Lexington, still down there with 12 points, another loss for them this past weekend. And that's the USL, James. Lots of good games, lots of good teams, competitive conferences, and pretty stadiums, Louisville having one of them. Let's talk about a game that happened there this past weekend, Tampa Bay Rowdies versus Louisville. Good game, tough start. James, where should we start? I think I'm generally an optimist, and I think it helped that I was there because I could see kind of the team get more riled up in person. I could see them kind of coming together a little bit. The vibes noticeably shifted after the Woobs goal, obviously. Did that come across on the broadcast? Could you see a slow turn towards momentum being built? I know this was something you had to rewatch, correct? Because I believe the Sun game was at the same time. So I know a lot of the Ralph's Mob and Rowdy's crew were in person at that semifinal. But did that come across at all? Or was this more in my head? I mean, I could see this on the field. The guys looked fired up. They looked ready to come back. I think it showed in the stats as well. But what did you see in this one?
Yeah, I think that the Rowdies did, you said earlier, grow into the game. I think that that's the perfect way to describe it. I don't know if it was specifically after the Woobs goal that I felt that way. But I'll tell you, I definitely did feel it pretty early into the second half. There was obviously a good substitution made around the 55th minute. Lewis and Lewis, the latest law firm for the Tampa Bay Academy or the Tampa Bay region. I don't know where Academy came from, but so
legal trouble.
Yeah, I guess. But so Lewis and Lewis, that's where I especially remember.
Yeah.
the game starting to just look a lot different. But yeah, I think that unfortunately with this one, we do still have to start with a much less attractive part of the game, a part of the game that the Rowdies kind of threw it away before we were able to build our way into it and ultimately could not dig ourselves out of the hole that we had within those first, 20, 30 minutes until Woob scored.
Yeah, Woob scored in the 30th minute, but those first two Louisville goals really pinned us back. It was in the 7th minute and the 16th minute, James.
Yeah.
I was ready to run up the tap at the bar behind me because I thought it would be a long night. Yeah. Rowdies, like you said, slowly grew into this one. I know for a fact that this Louisville team away is not a team you can very often play down from behind against. If you'll recall that famous 2020 conference final, the reason why the Rowdies go in there in a big game as a massive underdog, even in that game, everyone says Louisville's going to win that one. The reason why the Rowdies were able to go in there, win that one, is because they strike hard and strike early. It's two early goals from the Rowdies. Rowdies go up 2-0. And you'll remember that by the end of that game, we were barely holding on.
I mean, we had a lot of
chances to come back. But we were able to hold on because we built a quick and early lead as the underdog over there. That's what you needed to see over here. Maybe not a quick lead like that, but you needed to hold on to that 0-0 draw for longer than you did. Because that was just not the way to start. If you look at that first goal, like I said, there were some questions about like the defensive structure. I don't know why it was set up like that. Like I'm not like the tactical genius to be able to tell you why Goodrum was so wide open. I'm not quite sure. Like Guillen and White had their guys to mark in the middle. I think Bodley was on the right guy. I mean, if Bodley went to cover Goodrum, Louisville's number 25, 35, I can't tell who that is. 25 would have been wide open in front of the goal to be set up for what would have been the easiest goal of his life if that ball got sent. So it was a toss up, you know, with regards to who Blake should have been covering. It was really like a 50-50 when that ball came in, and he was just on the wrong guy. And Goodrum's wide open, put in a goal again. Maybe a leg offside. Definitely a leg offside, by the way. But still really shouldn't be in that position. It's unfortunate. I think more painful than that was obviously the second goal.
Yeah.
Because it was so, so, so avoidable. I think Chrysostomo has not given us the Chrysostomo we've come to know over the last couple of seasons. Or really just last season. He was kind of like a really big surprise to us, right? Kind of came in, played a big role, was pretty impressive in that middle of the field, pairing up with Lewis Hilton. I know it's been a little bit difficult because there's been so much kind of shifting in that midfield. His central midfield partner for the last several games at this point has been Ben Kaziel, who is not known to be, you know, a massive ball mover, you know, chance creator or anything. It's kind of been down to Chrysostomo to do that, and I think the load has been maybe a bit too big for him to handle at the moment. And this one, it wasn't the crop Chrysostomo we've known the last season at the moment. A really silly turnover. He's the guy that doesn't make mistakes like that. Is the kind of player I've characterized him as before, especially when he was kind of playing great, great soccer with us. He's the guy that you often don't notice in the game because he's just making the right pass, making the simple pass, moving the ball well. In this case, you noticed him, unfortunately, because, well, it was a turnover very, very close to the Rowdies' goal. Tried to body feint a Louisville player that wasn't in that spot and just ended up kind of losing the ball. All of a sudden, Louisville has the easiest goal of their life, goal by Ray Serrano. They're up 2-0 within 20 minutes. But I think you make a good point because I think it was easier for me to, like, default to the Woob's goal as the moment the game turns around. I think that's fair to a certain extent. It felt like we were back into it. Obviously, we got a goal on the board, the most important stat. I was fired up, you know, I was doing the whole chance and whatever. And there's a couple of Rowdies fans in the stadium, so shout out to them that were clapping and getting loud and everything as well. But those two subs did make a really great impact. I have to like really, I wish I knew more about tactics to tell you what was going on with all the subs. I think they were great. Like, I think this is a great line of substitutions that were made. I think Lewis Hilton being on the bench and like healthy is really great because hopefully he can start again. But we had a really quality, you know, run of five subs that were made, right? Andrew Mustali, for the great young player he is, didn't have to be the first sub in this one.
You know, right, right.
Like, that's I think, such a great, great development in terms of where we are in the season, in terms of where we are health-wise, in terms of the signing. We haven't really talked about explicitly yet, but, yeah, Luis Alvarez plays here now for what was said to be a record intra-league transfer fee between the League One and the Championship. However much that is, I can't imagine it's incredibly steep, but good to know the Rowdies aren't giving up on the season and going out and getting a proven quality player who had a pretty decent game coming in and having a good 35 minutes or so. But that duo, Lewis and Luis, however you want to say, I think helped to change the game for the better. There's a lot of good attacking movement. I thought Luis Alvarez would be kind of a Leo Fernandez type of player in the attack, kind of like a, you know, attacking mid situation. I'm not really sure where he was on the field, James. Again, it was hard for me to tell from like the field level. Like, where did you see Luis Alvarez fitting in on the field formationally? I couldn't really tell. Do you have an answer?
Yeah, I think that was generally where he was lining up, is in the role that we've come to see as like Leo Fernandez's role. And in fact, I don't know if this is a plan or something that just played out because of the circumstances, something that they might or might not return to here. But when Luis Alvarez came on in the 55th minute, there was a while where it was him and Leo Fernandez who were on the field. And up top was Rubens Passius up until, I think, the 76th minute where Leo went off and Manuel Arteaga came on. So I personally liked that little bit where they had Lewis Hilton as the base of the midfield. Obviously, Blake Bodily was on the left side and Nick Moon was the right wing back because Nick Moon went off and Thomas Van Kaziel went to the right wing back. That's what I mean to say. So that was the back line. And then Luis Alvarez and Leo Fernandez were on either side of Rubens Passius. I liked that a lot. So as I said, I don't know if that's something that we will see going forward. Danny Crisostomo obviously partnering with Lewis Hilton in that setup, but it looked pretty good. And Luis Alvarez does look like he's a legit player. Obviously, I think that there was plenty to indicate before this game that he was going to be that. We just, maybe a lot of us didn't know the name because it was from USL League One. So I'll include myself in that list for sure. But yeah, I think that the first 20 minutes, of course, really dug a hole and we were never able to get out of that despite some pretty good attempts to do so. In the meantime, I think that if we can work on cutting out the mistakes that really put us in that hole, then we should probably be able to do a lot better moving forward at giving ourselves, I guess you could say, giving ourselves the platform to go out and win a game. You have to not, first of all, you have to not lose a game. And I think that's what we did in the first 20 minutes, right? Is we didn't intentionally do this. I don't mean to say it that way, but we did throw the game away because of our bad play. The first goal, I think it was just very slow defending, very poor reactions from a lot of players. And whether or not they were offside, you can't really rely on VAR. You can hope that a referee is going to catch it, but these are sometimes situations that we end up in, as sure some Carolina Ascent fans in the USL, to go back to the USL Super League, they might be complaining right now, but I'm not particularly worried about their complaints, obviously.
Yeah. By the way, like, why don't we have VAR yet? I've heard it's expensive, right? But
I think it comes down to where all of the teams play, because we don't have the facilities for everyone within the USL, probably even within the USL Championship, to do that at this point. Yeah. Maybe not USL League One, where there are multiple teams playing at high schools, but you got to consider, I think we've got well, we've got one team playing at a giant baseball stadium. We've got at least two teams playing at smaller baseball stadiums. The Rowdies probably could, because our stadium is retrofitted for soccer. And I think that we're the only tenants there. So there shouldn't really be a problem. But yeah. I just think that it would be hard to fit into everybody around the league, all of their facilities.
I'm not quite sure what the like regulations are around VAR, but I've never quite understood why, like, you can't just use the broadcast cameras as like a starting point and run with it, but whatever. I digress. Not that the broadcast cameras would have gotten a good angle on this one. But apparently, like, the Rowdy's staff has access to cameras that are present in this one. So, whatever. I guess we could use those. Doesn't matter. Like you said, can't rely on VAR to save us on this one. I think you very justifiably and correctly said we lost the game in the first 20 minutes. Yeah, this team, in years past, we would have had the strength to be able to do it, to come back, equalize, win by one, win by two. We're in a point in the season this year where we can't really just do that, or haven't proven that we could do that, better said. So yeah, I'm not sure. This isn't a team that's built to come back from these early deficits, especially away, especially at a team as good as Louisville. So yeah, game was lost in the first 20 minutes. But again, sparks, right? Moments of rowdy soccer, like true rowdy soccer.
Yeah, exactly.
And even like just looking at Woops' first goal, man, like. Or his goal, right? The only goal of the game for us. Ridiculous. I mean, every time I see him put a goal away, I feel a little shocked. And I don't think
it's crazy, the positions and the amount of people that are around him that he can still score from.
Yeah, and and something I noticed when I watched his CPL highlights when we announced that he was coming here. The guy is like, he's a legit player, man. This guy is not someone to just, you know, throw on our bench, right? I know we've had him on the bench, had him come off of the bench in the past couple games. I don't think we can have a talent like that coming off the bench, if I'm being honest. The guy plays insane. The guy's, you know, putting away these goals that really shouldn't be happening. I think with that talent and that kind of, you know, knack for putting the ball away, even around three or four defenders, if you could just get more possession going, which
right,
that's kind of where you see where I'm going with this, right? With the way he plays soccer, you don't need to do that much to score that many goals. You know what I mean? You just kind of have to get him the ball in a somewhat okay position, and he can score a wonder goal. Maybe that's a big word for it, but that goal is pretty damn insane. I mean, he dribbles around what? Let's take a look. Let me watch it again. Indulge me. I want to watch this goal again because, okay, good transition play. Rowdy's got a good counterattack going. Rowdy's haven't had a great counterattack, by the way, in a really long time. We haven't had an insanely speedy team or anything, really, with the exception of a couple right wing backs that I can point to. Or wingers. We've had Nyonga Berry this year, obviously, who's been hurt. One of my favorite counterattack, just dribble by himself, find something, make something happen players was Malik Johnson.
Oh, man. That's a good pull.
Loved him. But other than players like that I'm just pulling off the top of my head, we haven't really had a great counterattack in the last many, many years. But this Rowdy's counterattack off of this Louisville turnover was exquisite. But I think it was capped off by an insane run by, you know, obviously, Woops. Leo Fernandez gets the ball, transition play here from our own half. Ollie sprinting down the line, just makes a quick pass. But that's my point. Like, Woobs is still, like a good 40 yards away from goal here. Not 40, like 30, 35 yards away from goal maybe, right? When Ollie makes that pass to him. He's got a defender on his back. He's got a defender bearing down on him at full speed. He's got another defender to his right, cutting down any opportunity to make a pass to whoever might be in the middle of the field. Woob sees all his defenders around him. He's got, you know, a box, almost like a pentagon of five players around him. Decides, well, no one else is here. Ollie's too far to my left. He just made that pass for me. And you could see the moment where he kind of just puts his head down and goes, which if this was, you know, anyone but a striker, you'd be like, maybe keep, you know, your head up, look for a pass, but this is your job. Go make it happen. Right. That's what he did. Guy puts his head down, goes to work, just a little faint, little body faint, a little ball roll with his right. See ya. Leaves number 17 from Louisville in the dust. He's gone. Whoops. Puts the ball right through number 32 for Louisville. Just sends him like confused. He doesn't know where the ball is. And no. The guy's lost. Whoops. Boom. Ball by himself. Top of the box. Insane finish. Boom. Powers. Top right corner. Louisville keeper can do nothing about it. Louisville fans in the back in that kind of weird extra standing supporter section. That's not really a supporter section because they don't really sing, but they call it a supporter section. Are in shock. They're insane. Heads on their head. Hands on their head. Whoops. Giving them some flack. Points at them. Here's the smack they've been talking, apparently, and puts in an insane goal. Holy crap. Okay. Long-winded way of saying, now let's look at the second half, right? A lot of possession, not a ton of crazy chances,
right.
A couple looks that were, again, maybe one good bounce from falling into the net.
That's really my takeaway, is I think that the Rowdies, in the first couple minutes, we've already talked about this, their possession was so terrible, and that Danny Chrysostomo's giveaway wasn't the only one out of the back, it was just the worst one.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
the Rowdies are in two phases. The Rowdies are like one step away from being, I think, at least a normal team, not like the worst team that's in the East right now, right? Yeah. They're trying to build up out of the back, at least in this game. They are capable of that. They're just not literally, they're not doing it at the moment. Yeah. On the other side of things, they are also capable of creating better chances. It's just that last play, that last touch, whatever it is, it's not coming off, and we're not getting those. And I think that we need the confidence again to be reminded that we're capable of it, and we'll start doing that. But we're not at that point specifically right now. And right now we're at the point where some of those are going to be giveaways, and some of those are going to be bad crosses or whatever at the last moment. And then all these chances go begging for us, or on the other side, of course, they can be created for the opposition.
Yeah. James, did you take a look at the possession numbers for a second half? If you have,
or I do not have, I do not have them different.
Okay. Top of your head, just quick guess. What do you think the possession number was like in the second half for the Rowdies?
Specifically the second half? I would say, it's not 60, but I would say 57,
58%. 65%. Possession.
I was off. Okay.
And I know, like, again, possession doesn't mean all that much when you want to obviously score goals, right? But this is notable for a variety of reasons. One, it's a lot of possession, right? 65% possession is a lot of possession. Once you get over that 60% mark, I feel like that's a noticeable thing you can maybe point out. 65%. Round up to 70, right? No, I don't. You know what I'm saying, right? It's noticeable. That's a lot of possession, a lot of time with the ball. Second reason it's noticeable. This, we've played teams in the past where that might be their game plan, right? Where, I don't know, we're playing at home and we're playing a, you'll remember that El Paso game last year, right? El Paso scores that insane, like, equalizer that just was out of this world. Like, teams like that that aren't playing good soccer, that are bad at soccer, I'm sorry, that's mean, but you get my point. Come to Outlang, while we're a good team playing good soccer, people are scared of us, and they sit back and let us have possession. That's the game. They play counterattack. You get a lot of possession, and that doesn't really mean all that much at the end of the game, because that's just the game plan. Louisville City at home, us going away to Louisville, a team that's in first place in the East now, that's not their game plan, right? Louisville's not saying, let's sit back because the Rowdies are a really good team. Like, right. I'm sure you can kind of ease off a little bit, but when you're up by only one, that's not really the game plan. And Danny Cruz is, and I don't think that's Danny Cruz's side. Now, again, I'm not the tactical expert of the century or anything, but I would put all my money on the fact that Danny Cruz was not happy at the end of this game, because that could not have been his game plan to say, let's give the Rowdy 65% possession and sit back and absorb all of that. I think that was a tactical shift. I don't know what it is, but something was changed at halftime Obviously, Hilton and Alvarez come in the 55th minute. I think that helps a lot because those are guys that can really move the ball. Hilton's just a calm presence in the middle that, you know, keeps the ball, moves it well, doesn't turn it over all that often, right? He's the guy that you want when you have a lot of possession to kind of look for that gap in the back line. So maybe that helps as well. But that's, I noticed, like, that's notable, in my opinion. Away to the best team in the East, even when they were in second or third, I still think Louisville is kind of ahead above the East at the moment, just roster-wise and whatnot. That's notable. So something happened at halftime. Something was shifted slightly, or maybe we just locked in and played our game. Maybe that was always the game plan. Certainly, that 55th minute duo of subs, I think, helps. But that's notable. Because of that, Rowdies have a lot of time on the ball, kind of just looking for those spaces. I think Louisville, despite not having the ball, does a really good job of kind of making sure we're not doing a lot with those. We still turn it over once or twice. It's unfortunate. Goodrum has a pretty noticeable look off of Leo Fernandez turnover, which is unfortunate, but nothing really crazy. Now I'm just looking at the highlights to refresh myself, but there was like two or three points in this second half where the ball is kind of just bouncing around the box, waiting for a Rowdy's attacker, forward, midfielder, whoever, to put a body on it and just knock it over the line. There was that one in the 80th minute. Now, looking at the highlights, where Arteaga was just so close, ever so close to putting that ball away off of that free kick. Nice header to put it into the mixer. Arteaga throws himself at the ball, but it doesn't happen. There's another chance like that that happens later on in this one. But that's our best look of the half. All that being said, maybe you wish a little bit more kind of was happening in terms of the really dangerous looks in that second half with all that possession.
Yeah.
But I think it's a noticeable shift in how we play our game. It's a noticeable shift in attitude, mentality of the team, ability to hold on to the ball like that against a really good team away. And all while doing this, coming back from down 2-0. Well, not successfully doing it, but like trying to do it. I think those are the positives to take away here. There was a positive punch back from the Rowdies against a really, really good team away from home. Yeah, and especially on the Arteaga look in the 80th minute off that free kick, we are one lucky bounce away from that equalizer. So it's unfortunate. Again, I just wish we a little bit more was happening in terms of the attack in that second half, but I think that's about as good as it can get when you open, you know, down 2-0 off of a couple, one in particular, really unfortunate mistake. Long-winded way of saying, okay, with a shrug, okay. Yeah, okay. I mean, there's something there, right? I don't want to get into the thing of, like, you know, saying, oh, well, it feels like we're kind of just pointing to a five-minute stretch of Rowdy soccer. And you're like, see, like, there's a spark. There's a note of Rowdy soccer right there every week. And this one, I don't think it was just like a couple-minute stretch or like a couple five-minute stretches. I think you're talking about an extended period of time where the Rowdies looked more comfortable, more dangerous than Louisville. The game noticeably shifted in the second half, and it was not because Louisville sat back and said, let's let Rowdy have possession. It's because the Rowdies were on top of the game and were applying the pressure. So good stuff. Unfortunately, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter because we still lost. But if you're looking for those small victories, this is a pretty noticeable one.
Yeah, absolutely. As we said in multiple episodes before this week, baby steps. And baby steps are... baby steps will get you out of a bad situation, and baby steps are what we still need to get us from being terrible to looking better to eliminating these mistakes, these mistakes to adding chances to being a good team.
Yeah.
Those are hopefully, let's hope that that's as linear as I just laid it out.
But, yeah.
There's probably a lot more to it than that.
This league is really forgiving though, James. What you only need to finish in eighth place to qualify.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, baby steps, but yeah, like, it really doesn't take all that much to turn something around. like, it wouldn't be the comeback story of the century for the Rowdies to qualify for the playoffs still in eighth place. You know what I mean? That's maybe like a stretch of three good games. Like, we're back in the picture. Not hell, two good games, like two good back-to-back games, and the Rowdies are in the playoff picture. Like, that's how forgiving this league can be. You have to take advantage of that.
Exactly. Right?
But I think we were really close to doing that this weekend. I think we have a good chance of doing that this weekend. I love Luis Alvarez, man. Like, he looked already influential in this one. Give him another full week of training, playing at home, right? And Alang, I think we have a guy that could make some painful things happen for Miami. I want him to start. I really do. I know he can't really get him to start his first game. We still want to get him, like, accustomed to the team and everything. I love Van Kaziel. Like, he's a great person and he's really serviceable, but don't take this the wrong way. I would like for us to get to the point where he's not starting, right? Where he can come in and be an energy guy, be a role player. He's a great utility guy. He's not the guy a successful playoff team has starting in the middle of the field every game. You know what I mean? At this moment, right? There's a different type of formation where he does. What we're trying to run doesn't really play at 100% with his type of player there. You know what I mean? Love Van Kaziel, but I'm hoping we could start to get Lewis Hilton back. I'm hoping Crisostomo finds his rhythm again. And I'm hoping Luis Alvarez finds a spot somewhere in there for a starting 11 role. Okay. And I hope we get full version of Nick Moon and Blake Bodley back. I think we got glimpses of that this week, by the way. That's something we didn't touch on. But both of them playing together, awesome. I think that's good going forward. Young Abiri's injury is, I don't know what it is. Frankly, I have no clue when he's coming back. But if this is what we're running on the wingbacks for a while, or like that, whatever we're calling that, that's the San Diego loyal duo that we heard so much about when they came over to the Rowdies. So let's get that full version of them, that San Diego loyal version of them, and you have one of the best wingback pairs in the league. So they just have to find their game again. They have to find their rhythm. And I think we'll be in a good spot. Like, there's a lot to really start to push us in the right direction here. And Guillen had a great game, too. Let's talk about players of the match, James. Are we at that point?
Go for it.
Here's my man of the match, Aaron Guillen. Played that center back role again. His natural position. Aaron Guillen is not set out at this point to be a, you know, starting left back. But center back? Sure. Why not? I mean, that's what we've known him as for a while, and he's been really good at it. I think this podcast has been critical of Aaron Guillen this year. Like, we've pointed out, he's just not been himself. He's played a lot of that left-back role where I don't think he's 100% comfortable right now. He had a great game against one of the best attacks in the league, one of the scariest teams in the league at, you know, their home. It looked great. It looked like he was coming together. Forrest Lasso, I think, maybe needed some time on the bench to kind of needs, right? He was on the bench in this one, didn't get any playing time. Maybe just trying something new with Guillen, Weick, and Castellanos. They looked pretty good, all things considered. I think that first goal, we could kind of maybe blame on them, but they weren't even really in the picture on that one. Maybe that's part of the problem. I don't know. Second goal, not their fault. They looked pretty solid. They shut down a lot of the Louisville stuff going on. Louisville doesn't have a ton of great looks in this one. I think Guillen was at the center of a lot of great defensive looks for the Rowdies, as he has been for the past several seasons with us. Like, this is the Guillen we know. I think it's worthy of a shout out because of that. I think he's starting to find his rhythm again. I think that means trouble for any attacker in the USL.
There you go. I think that's pretty good reasoning. On my side, I went with Lewis Hilton as my man of the match. Carlos pointed out that the game probably turned before the 55th minute, and that's fair. However, I think that when Lewis Hilton came on, he provided a balance that we really haven't seen a lot from the Rowdies recently. When he plays next to Danny Crisostomo, I think that that maximizes Danny Crisostomo's strengths, and I think that it kind of I think that asking him to play as a defensive midfielder isn't his best look. And with all due respect to Thomas Van Kaziel, because I do think that he's a great player and can play in multiple different roles, I really think that Lewis Hilton is one of the better players in the entire league, specifically in his position. So when we get him out there, we look like a different team. He's able to control the ball in ways that not just Van Kaziel, but honestly, Danny Chrysostomo probably doesn't do it from the same position either. There are very few players in the entire USL Championship who can control the ball in that part of the field the way that Lewis Hilton does, with the same authority, the same bulldog mentality when he's out of possession. So I do really like Lewis Hilton being back, and that's part of why he's my man of the match. I'm happy about the direction of this midfield.
James, I have one more thing for you before I move on to the next portion of this. Something I wanted to touch on that I just forgot to mention. My last thing I'll ask you on about this game, goalie situation. Quick comment. Vondre, you like him starting? Ken PC, what are your thoughts? Quick.
I still don't know overall. I think Ken PC has played so poorly that Vondre deserves his chance, but Vondre hasn't. I don't think he's looked bad, but he really hasn't covered himself in glory either. I think that's the phrase that I used previously for his goal. Was it last? Yeah, the South Georgia Tormenta goal. That's exactly the one. It wasn't his fault, but he did not cover himself in glory there. And that's kind of how I feel for the most part. So it's up in the air for me. That one is definitely it's an ongoing debate.
Yeah, I think if there's something to some question marks that are more unanswerable, I think that might be one of them. Andre's got some talent. I don't know. Like, Ken PC hasn't had great stuff. I know. I think he started to really grow into it. I think in the last few games before he was benched, I think he started to look more comfortable. I think it was unfortunate the timing of it, because I thought when he got benched was when he was starting to play some comfortable goalkeeping. I don't know if that makes any sense. All that being said, Vondre's had some good moments as well, like you said. I like how you phrased that, not covering himself in glory either, but he's had some good moments, made one really, really, really big save. I think it was that Lexington game, right? To keep us in that one for sure.
That's right. That was the one where no, it was the South Georgia game. It was the South Georgia game. It was 1-0. And he made a huge save off of a breakaway, which is not, again, I said this at the time, that's not something you see frequently in soccer, a legitimate breakaway. And that's what they had. And he saved it. So and now to quote Ryan Davis, the commentator for the game, that is as good as a goal at the other end.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. So it's back and forth for me, honestly. I do really like Ken PC as, you know, like his talent. I think it's there. I think he started to play better right before he was benched. So I'm back and forth on it. I don't know. I really don't like that first goal for Louisville. I think obviously it was offsides, but I think there was a little bit more that could have been done there as well. But it's hard to talk about goalie play, like, because I don't know. I feel like it can go either way, and you can't prove a negative is what I've always said about exactly goalie and stuff. So something to keep in mind as we go forward. Who knows what will happen? I think it's a big question mark still on this team. A lot of things are starting to kind of clear up in terms of where we are, in terms of what formation looks like, in terms of who we want to play. I think that's one thing that still is a bit gray on the personnel end. Okay, long recap of that Louisville game that I think deserved it, because I think there's a lot to flush out there. And I think we did that. We did that pretty well.
There's a lot to flush out. That's absolutely true. There was much to go over.
Yeah. If you're listening to this live, whether it's YouTube or Twitter, feel free to throw in your thoughts in here as well. I always love seeing what everyone else had to say. I don't like going on the Facebook replies. The Facebook replies are always insane. And I know folks are still upset, obviously, and justifiably so, about where the season is.
Yeah.
So I don't blame folks for being like upset about, you know, just what feels like yet another loss, because it is, right? I think it's fair to still be upset, angry after that game, especially with how it started. But if you want to be a little bit more optimistic, like I always try to be, I think there's a lot of good takeaways still that are not just small little moral victories, but broader, bigger picture shifts that I think are indicative of hopefully a good result run coming. But again, don't blame anyone for being upset. Obviously, it's still with what at the end of the day is yet another loss. James, before we jump into the preview against the Miami FC, by the way, this weekend, same day as the Sun game. Who can we call about that, James? That's kind of ridiculous. But shameless plug that just liking and subscribing is free. But if you want to support this podcast just a little bit more, you can buy some new threads and support us by heading over to shop.rblrsports.com. Check out all the cool threads over there, new gear. You want some new Sun gear for the game this weekend, if you're going there, if you're going to the Rowdies game for Pride Night, you want some RBLR Sports Rowdies gear, go check out shop.rblrsports.com and use the promo code COYR for 10% off. Pretty good deal, James. Go get geared up before your soccer this weekend. Or any Tampa Bay sports. The Rays are still going on. You get some Rays gear. You can get some Bucks gear before the new season. Lightning just wrapped up. Get some hockey gear as we head into the offseason there. James, doesn't matter, though, because the only game that matters to me right now in the next several minutes while we discuss it is Tampa Bay Rowdies versus the Miami FC at Allianz Stadium in St. Pete. This is not the Miami of last year, folks, like I've said before. This is a team that wins games. They're okay, which is a dramatic increase from where they were last year. I don't know. Like, I'm not quite sure. I mean, new coach, obviously. Investing in some decent Argentinian talent. It seems like the whole team is Argentinian.
Except for Bill Hamid.
Some interesting news about, you know, their coach from last year, by the way, that we'll get to in the extra time segment. I think there's some rather comedic narratives there. But Miami FC, competitive soccer, James. Be at the Rowdies game this weekend, unless you're going to the Sun game, which justifiable, very fair. Absolutely. Don't blame anyone for making that run as well. Obviously, Sun in the championship game, but the Rowdies against Miami FC on Pride Night this weekend as well. I believe at the same time, even. That's crazy. USL HQ's got, I got to call someone at USL. Miami are doing pretty well lately, James. 4 wins in the last 7, 1 penalty win against us in the Jaeger Cup. I think the biggest win that they had there was actually making it a draw at all. We were up 3-0, if you recall. That's how we need to play the whole game, right? Not second half. If we ignore that second half, the Rowdies played their best game of the year in that first half. Miami comes back, ties us 3-3, wins and penalties with good performance from Bill Hamid. They mostly play in a 4-4-2 with the said Bill Hamid in net behind John Ricketts, Dalton Knutson, Bolu Akinyode, a rotating left back. In midfield, they have Christian Vasquez, Matias Romero, Diego Mercado, and Lucas Melano. May sit behind Sebastian Blanco, Francisco Bonfiglio. Bonfiglio has 6 goals. Vasquez has 3 assists. Blanco and Vasquez are the chance creators on this team. James, you noted that there's an interesting piece on this team out by John Morrissey, obviously the USL Tactics GOAT, USL legend, John Morrissey. Definitely go check that out. I'm sure you can find it on his USL Tactics pages, websites, places. Go check it out. I'm sure it's an interesting review. I haven't gotten around to it, but if James read it and says it's good, I trust James. I'd recommend it to them. Predictions for how this game will go, James? How do you see this playing out? Have you seen any Miami FC games lately? Are they rolling? Do they look good? Thoughts?
I haven't seen them as frequently as I would have liked just because it's World Cup qualifying right now, and that is the biggest focus for me. We're going to return to that later, folks. But, I also do a Florida Soccer Report podcast for Beyond the 90. That's with Kartik Krishnayar. And everybody who knows that name knows that he is like, he knows everything that's going on with Floridian soccer and probably beyond. So I do get, if nothing else, a weekly update from Kartik related to them. And they have started to work out a lot of kinks in their system. They have also started to add a lot more attacking ability to their system. And I think that part of that is just good organizational aspects. This is also something, by the way, if you do want to go over to John Morrissey's article about this, the first thing in his latest article about the USL is related to the Miami FC. So you can go do that and get a pretty good update on where they are. But As he stated there, and I don't want to go over everything like it was my own thoughts because it's not, but they generally play in a 4-4-2 and the organization is top notch. They are doing a lot better defensively than they have ever done in the past, or not ever, but let's think about last year and how poorly that team was organized. And also, I really don't want to put it this way, but the talent of individual players there was just really not up to speed with the USL Championship. It's rough to say, but it's true. That is not the case in 2025. So positively for their 200 fans or so, they can actually get a good, decent defense lined up. And that includes a couple of USL veterans like Bolu Akinyode, who was previously with the club and has returned. Up top, honestly, their Argentinians are starting to cook. I figured at some point, these are all guys who have come from different places in different levels, but they are all veterans of a certain pretty high level. It might not be the Argentinian top flight. It might not be River Plate or Boca Juniors or Racing or the other clubs that have just been doing well within Argentina, but yeah. they at least came up within a lot of those clubs if they didn't make it to the senior flight or the senior team of the top flight with all those teams. So there is a lot of talent there, and eventually these guys were going to figure out some way to click. So that's what I've been leaning on, and they ultimately have at least proven me that much right. Carlos, do we have predictions lined up? Are you ready to go?
I'll give you my prediction in just a second. Like I said, I asked you because I haven't really watched Miami FC. I'm just not a fan of watching soccer with 50 people in the stands. But notable result in the last few weeks that I'll point to is their 2-1 win against Loudoun United at home. That might have not been a notable result last year. In fact, that might have been a game that you would have avoided watching with everything you have. Miami FC versus Loudoun United last year. But this year, it's an interesting game. Miami FC wins 2-1 at home against them back on May 17th. At that point, I believe Loudoun was actually still in first place or tied for first place in the Eastern Conference. This last three games, loss at home to Birmingham Legion, which I think is kind of a knock on what was otherwise a pretty good run. In the last five or so games, a good win at home against FC Naples, who we know has been pretty interesting thorn in the side of some championship teams, in particular Charleston in the Jägermeister Cup, is still really, really doing well in the League One level. And of course, last week, a win away at Rhode Island at their new stadium, 1-0. So Miami FC is on a pretty good run right now. Doesn't matter if it's home or away, they're finding some results in the last few games. But James, I'm always going to be optimistic. And I think now I finally have reasonable cause for that. I love Luis Alvarez. I love what he's bringing to the table. I love what we're trying to start to bring together formationally and tactically or whatever. Like, it's producing more possessions, which is eventually going to produce more goals because Wolves is on fire still. Let's win this one 2-0. Let's get a shutout. Yeah. Let's go out there, play like just the most complete game we've played of the year. Let's get an early lead of 2-0 in that first half. Maybe we spread it out 1-1 between the halves and then not blow it in the second half. We'll be in business. We've upgraded from where we were like when we played Miami and we went up 3-0 in that first half. We're a better team than we were at that point. Luis Alvarez, with Lewis Hilton being healthy again, with Nick Moon being more healthy now than he was back then. Like, the team is better than they were back then. I think we can get a good result against this team at home, who is playing well, but who is the team that I'm frankly still not afraid of. We need to start turning things around, and I think we're heading in that trajectory. So this is a good weekend to do it. It's going to happen.
All right. Well, Eureka and I have joined you in saying that the Rowdies will score 2 goals. Eureka has predicted a 2-1 win, and I have predicted, though, a 2-2 draw. So twos all around for the Tampa Bay Rowdies. Let's see if they can get that done at the very least. Hopefully a win. That would be very nice, too. Yeah. Let's move on now to our extra time segment. And as I said, World Cup qualifiers are going on. First, it was the international window on the women's side. The U.S. women's national team did relatively well. Then it started the men's international window. The U.S. men's national team apparently still sucks, so just keep that in mind. Ecuador is doing very well, on the other hand. They might secure their qualification this very evening if my sources that are next to me on the screen are correct. And
I'm always correct, James. You're talking about the record sources of me. If Ecuador wins tonight, yeah, you're right. They qualified tonight. So, sorry, not to interrupt you. What were you going to say?
Well, I was just going to say there is all of that World Cup qualifying going on. Some of the teams that I wanted to see have made it, such as Jordan for their first ever World Cup. That's incredible. Some of the teams that I wanted to see move on have not. I'm thinking specifically of the Dominican Republic, who shot themselves in the foot, and Palestine, who got screwed by a bad referee's call, but nothing that you can do, I guess, at this point in time. There are plenty of World Cup qualifiers still to come in the future, and the Gold Cup starts soon. Forget the Gold Cup, the Club World Cup starts soon. All of this, I believe all of this starts this weekend.
Yeah.
The only real thing that I'm excited about with the Club World Cup, because I'm not actually that excited about it, but the Tampa Bay Rowdies are hosting Benfica as their training state, their training ground, I should say. The Waters Sportsplex, I think, is the official name, according to what I've seen from a couple of different places. Benfica will be using that facility to as their base camp while they travel. Yeah. I think that they're mostly playing in Florida, specifically Orlando. But regardless, it's not too bad. And I'm hopeful that I can get some interviews or some pictures or something with Benfica players if I have the opportunity. So I'm going to keep an eye on that.
Yeah.
So fun.
Yeah. I mean, that is the most notable thing about the Club World Cup for me. I have so many frustrations with the Club World Cup. I think in so many levels, it's kind of just another cash grab by FIFA. But
yes,
exactly. You have to admit that there's occasional fun things about it. So, one of those being, by the way, that like I think it was so stupid. What was the Mexican team that couldn't play for some like?
Oh, Club León.
What was the reason? Do you remember? Like
they have, they are part of an ownership group with another Mexican club that has qualified, and FIFA does not allow clubs that have the same ownership group to play within their competition, which I think UEFA also has. So Red Bull has had to divest themselves of teams in the past to avoid this, but the Mexican ownership group did not do that, I guess, in time or maybe at all. And so while tickets were being sold for Club León to play in games, there was an arbitration case as to whether or not they could play in those games. It was ultimately decided they could not. And all of the people who would have bought tickets to see Club León play are up a creek, you could say. And yeah. They were replaced by a playoff between LAFC and Club America, which LAFC won. It's a farce from front to back. But as you said, Carlos, it's absolutely just a cash grab. It's honestly really the idea of a Club World Cup is something that appeals to me in theory, and the execution is kind of disgusting. But
it's ridiculous how the teams were like selected. Like Inter Miami was like the invitational team or something like that, right?
Because they got to get Messi in.
Like it's insane to me. In theory, the way you would do it is, you know, the winners of the international competitions over the last X amount of years, right, between Club World Cups, they get the bids, right? Personally, it like particularly is annoying because Liga won the 2023 Sudamericana and was one of the best teams in the last 3 years and absolutely felt like they should have been in there. I thought that's how it worked, honestly. I thought you win the international tournaments and the club tournaments and you get in, you know, your Champions League winner, your Europa League winner, your Conference League winner, your Liga Belardes winner, your Sudamericana winner. But they did it by like this arbitrary point rankings that was like systematically designed, what it feels like, to select all the biggest teams, like just popularity wise. Boca Juniors, River Plate, and then a bunch of the big Brazilian teams. Boca Juniors and River Plate haven't won anything at the international level in the last, like, in the 2020s, which is, I feel like, should be kind of the standard to be in the Club World Cup, right? You win and you get in. It's ridiculous. It really is just the biggest teams that they can pick and just select to sell tickets. Like, even between Club America and LAFC, like, let's just pick let's just happen to pick the biggest Mexican team, right, to be in this playoff and give them a chance to get in, or one of the bigger, you know, MLS brands. It's kind of annoying. Even the players, and it's not for the reason we're complaining about, but the Seattle Sounders players have gotten into some controversy because they've been wearing their Club World Cash Grab shirts over how the money is distributed. It's a whole thing. It really is kind of, like you said, kind of a farce from top to bottom. All that being said, take advantage of Benfica being in the area. Maybe go check out a practice. You can see from the outside. It's stupid. Also, here's a talk for another day. That what's up with all the U.S. men's national team players sitting out of the club or of the Gold Cup? That's stupid. Apparently, we can just do that now. It's only like an American sports thing. I had never like heard of it on such a wide level outside of the U.S. Right? Like the U.S. is a culture of like, you know, what's the word? Like just the sitting out of games. Like it happened in the NBA a lot. I don't remember fans hated that. It's kind of trickled into soccer, and I guess we could just, as big players, just sit out of tournaments. That feels frustrating. I don't think Christian Pulisic is too good to be playing in the Gold Cup. You know what I mean? Like, it's your national team. You know what I mean? I thought there was some sort of pride that comes with that, but I don't know. That's a talk for another day. That's stupid. But more importantly, Ecuador can qualify to the World Cup with a win tonight. The U.S. doesn't have to worry about qualifying because we host the damn thing, so that's fun. Which, as you know, James, qualifying isn't always a given for the U.S., apparently in 2018. Last thing I'll say on the World Cup, I was a little bit annoyed about the expansion, increasing the number of teams. I'll admit at this point, it's kind of interesting to see like an Uzbekistan sneak in, right? It's not that they're not even, you know, we're not adding like bad teams either. Some of these teams that you've mentioned, Jordan, Uzbekistan, right? They're playing good soccer. Like they can give any team trouble.
Jordan almost won the Asian Cup, I think, at 2023. So yeah, good team.
They're good teams. They're just teams that have never been good enough to hop over the you know, Asian Football Federation limit for World Cup spots. So it's not that we're sneaking in bad teams. We're just putting in good teams that just couldn't win that last game every once in a while. So it's fun. I think it in some ways it kind of messed up the South American qualifiers, since there is only 10 member federations. And you're letting, what, I think it's, is it five get the auto bid and six in the playoffs? So it's kind of a lot. It might be six get the auto bid and seven in the playoffs, but I digress. I think it's fun to have an Uzbekistan in. They have a great fan, like, culture. It's really cool to see. I've watched, like, some mini docs on them, and they're playing really, really great soccer as well. So it'll be really fun to watch. Keep an eye on them. They're my fun, random dark horse team already. But Ecuador, like you said, wins tonight, and we're in. And by the way, while we're also just rambling about the World Cup, Chile is the first South American team after their loss today to be knocked out, which I think is really funny because they tried to get Ecuador knocked out of Qatar with like a demand that they be removed because our right back was actually Colombian or not. And they were just, anyway, Ecuador had to start this tournament qualifier with minus three, and now we're in second place. And Chile is out first before Ecuador, and Ecuador can qualify tonight. So what goes around comes around, James. I think the Rowdies are due for a big game, and Ecuador is winning, and everyone's winning. Like, just put good things out in the universe, good things come around to you. Bad things and bad things come around to you. You know what I mean? The Rowdies are a good club. We're protecting our players, and we have great fan base, and we're going to win games, and just like that. I don't know, James, I'm rambling. I just want to win. James, come on. I'm tired. Stop me before I just keep rambling and making things up. What else would you have to say?
Well, we can go over one quick note that is related to Miami FC, tangentially at least. Last year's manager, Antonio Nocerino, who led the team to a historically bad season, somehow was hired by Las Vegas. And as of June 10th, he has been fired by Las Vegas. So is anybody surprised by that? Because I am not, but so it goes. I hope that this is just Las Vegas saying that this is not good enough for us, and we're going to find somebody who is better. Somehow this guy needs to stop charming himself into boardrooms because it just doesn't make any sense to me. But Antonio Nocerino is out again. The last note that I wanted to bring up is that the Tampa Bay Sun are hosting the USL Super League final this Saturday night. They won in an absolutely thrilling semifinal at home versus Dallas. And I'm obviously hopeful that the Sun win the whole thing. But yeah, Carlos, as you said, keep the winning going.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It'd be a fun weekend for Tampa Bay sports. Let's get the back-to-back soccer wins and bring a title in our first USL Super League season. Yeah, why not? Let's make it happen. That'd be pretty sweet. Good environment based on what I saw in the videos. James, you were at the semifinal. How'd that game look? How was the atmosphere like?
Fantastic. And I think that they're doing a little construction to the sport, to the scoreboard. So the fans, the supporter section where everybody's supposed to be standing, chanting, screaming, all that stuff was packed. And cool. It looked great.
That's awesome. Last thing I'll say on here, I talked to Eureka about this because I've been writing up a little fun piece. I went to an NPSL game last week. Keep an eye out. I want to share that with everyone. Super fun. I got to talk to the GM about what it's like constructing an NPSL team, which is always fascinating to me. How do you construct a summer league of college kids / a random professional? They have like a former Miami FC player in there who's tearing it up. Like, it's really, really interesting how you put together an NPSL team or even a USL League 2 team. And it's their first season. District Elite FC, just on the road here in the DC area, is playing some really interesting soccer and selling out their little stadium, 350 people at their last home game, which is super fun to see at an NPSL level. It's a really interesting story. The GM's really cool. They're putting together a really, really it's fascinating to see how a team comes together at that level, how you construct a roster, how you get over all the logistical challenges of, finding a place to play and whatnot. Keep an eye out for it. Finishing writing it up. I want to share with everyone. It was a really fun conversation. Okay, James, that's it. We've been talking for over an hour. The Rowdies may be coming back. I don't know. I know Virginia Dream is still insane, if anybody's still curious about them. Tampa Bay signed up a big game. It'll be a fun weekend. Let's go make something happen, James. Why not?
Let's do that. With that, we will get everybody out of here. Thank you, listeners, for tuning in. We always appreciate when you do. If you could do one more thing for us, please follow RBLR Sports on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, Threads, anywhere, at RBLR Sports. I'm mostly on Twitter, at RBLR James K. You can use the hashtag AskRBLR, or you can reach Carlos.
At CarlosTPA10 on X.com/Twitter.
You can like and subscribe to our podcast if you want to get the full experience. We're on YouTube, or if you just want to listen, no problem. We're also on Spotify and the iHeartRadio apps, Apple and Google Podcasts, all that stuff. So for hopefully some improvement and maybe even a win on the horizon, come on you Rowdies.
Thank you for tuning into this presentation by RBLR Sports. On your way out of the stadium, please remember to like and subscribe.